If you recall, in Ted's class, we studied the book of Jeremiah and about the man Jeremiah. And it's kind of a parallel between Jeremiah and Ezekiel. Although Jeremiah continued to live in Judea, he was free to move about. He owned property. He had the Babylonian blessing for his freedom. But Ezekiel himself was deported during the second deportation to Babylon. If you'll remember in chapter 1, last week we studied, Ezekiel was just about 18 years old when the Babylonians made their first foray into Palestine, carried away many of the royal family members. Daniel was one of these. About 7-8 years later, they came again, and this time they took Ezekiel amongst the many captives. A lot of them were sent as slaves. A lot of them were put in prison. A lot of them were free to settle down in settlements. Ezekiel was one of these, and so he settled down in a town called Tel Abib, which was on a canal of the Euphrates River called Shebar, I believe it was, or Chebar. And he lived there for about 5 years before he began his prophesying and his ministry. In chapter 1, 2, and so forth, God spoke to Ezekiel and referred to him as Son of Man. And this recurrent theme is more than 90 times in the book of Ezekiel. God refers to Ezekiel as Son of Man. Can anybody tell us what God meant by that? What was God's reason for calling Ezekiel Son of Man?
Well, I'm not sure that I know what the reason for calling Ezekiel Son of Man was, but it is an interesting observation that this phrase Son of Man is also a phrase that's used in the Gospels by Jesus frequently to refer to himself.
I did a little bit of research last week when it was brought up. I just did a little online research about it, and I think one of the common themes that I found when looking at that Son of Man term was that it specifically refers to him as a human being, as being of the human race, and that being the case, it's the fact that God has chosen for his word to be disseminated by a human rather than by angelic beings or one of his other created beings. He has chosen the human race that he created to give his word roundabout to other humans. And I think not only with Ezekiel, but also with Christ, we see Christ being called the Son of Man while he was in the flesh, specifically referring to Christ in his human form. And so I think it has something to do with, at least my opinion, from taking those things into consideration, I think it has something to do with the fact that God was entrusting his word to a human.
Anybody else have any comments about that?
Well, to kind of reinforce what Ted was saying, it's a word that's used or a phrase that's used only in the Gospels. It's not a phrase that one of the apostles might have used if he was referring back to Jesus when he was on the earth, but it's a phrase, and it's frequently a phrase that is used by Jesus himself to refer to himself. So I think Ted is right. It may be emphasizing humanity.
Ron,
you need to unmute yourself.
Okay, go ahead.
In my Bible, I'm using the English Standard Version right now.
Yeah.
And it is saying Son of Adam, which would still lend some credence because, you know, humanity.
Yes. Yeah, there's probably, I haven't looked at any other Bibles as far as the different versions to see what their use is. And that's something that I should have done. So apologize for that. But I think it all means the same thing. I think God is referring to Ezekiel here as Son of Man and showing his human, speaking to a human, and God with his majesty and showing the difference. I think Jesus spoke the same thing, and I think Ted and Dean were right. I think he was referring to himself in his human form. So it is kind of interesting simply because he uses this more than 90 times in this book of Ezekiel. We'll get into that a little bit more, but I'd like you to be able to kind of put that in the back of your mind and think about it a little bit as you go along and study with us. And if you have an opportunity, speak up, and we'll take a look at some other definitions. There's also, too, in the first part, especially of Ezekiel, there are some words that God uses about the people, the Israelites here, the Jews. He refers to them in not real nice terms. Things like rebellious, he keeps referring to them as rebellious people, impudent, stiff-hearted, obstinate, refers to them as briars and thorns and scorpions, transgressors. And there's probably other words that God comes up with, but he is warning Ezekiel here what he's going to run into, but he is going to make Ezekiel just as hard-hearted in the other direction so that he can put up with this rebellion from these people. Where Jeremiah was sent to the people of Jerusalem and Judah, Ezekiel here is, of course, part of the captives. And in Babylon, and that's who he is speaking to, are the Jews that are in Babylon. I'm going to go ahead and read chapter 2 if you'd like to, or chapter 3, pardon me, or chapter 2. We'll start out. There's only 10 verses, so it won't take too much longer, and then we'll talk a little bit about it. Chapter 2, it says, "And he said to me, Son of man, stand upon thy feet, and I will speak to thee. And the Spirit entered into me when he spoke to me and set me upon my feet that I heard him that spake unto me. And he said unto me, Son of man, I send thee to the children of Israel, to a rebellious nation that hath rebelled against me. They and their fathers have transgressed against me, even unto this very day. for they are impudent children and stiff-hearted. I do send thee unto them, and thou shalt say to them, Thus saith the Lord God. And they, whether they will hear or whether they will forbear, for they are a rebellious house, yet shall know that there hath been a prophet among them. And thou, son of man, be not afraid of them, neither be afraid of their words, though briars and thorns be with thee, and thou dost dwell amongst scorpions. Be not afraid of their words, nor be dismayed at their looks, though they be a rebellious house. And thou shalt speak my words unto them, whether they will hear or whether they will forbear, for they are most rebellious. But thou, son of man, hear what I say to thee. Be not thou rebellious like that rebellious house. Open thy mouth and eat that I give thee. And when I looked, I behold, a hand was sent unto me, and lo, a roll of a book was therein. And he spread it before me, and it was written within and without, and there was written therein lamentations and mourning and woe. Let's go ahead and finish up with chapter 3. Is there someone that would like to read chapter 3? There's only, I think, 22 verses. Anybody want to read?
I'll read it.
Okay, thank you.
And he said to me, Son of man, eat what is before you, eat this scroll. Then go and speak to the house of Israel. So I opened my mouth, and he gave me the scroll to eat. Then he said to me, Son of man, eat this scroll I'm giving you, and fill your stomach with it. So I ate it, and it tasted as sweet as honey in my mouth. Then he said to me, Son of man, go now to the house of Israel and speak my words to them. You are not being sent to a people of obscure speech and difficult language, but to the house of Israel, not to many peoples of obscure speech and difficult language whose words you cannot understand. Surely if I had sent you to them, they would have listened to you. But the house of Israel is not willing to listen to you because they are not willing to listen to me. For the whole house of Israel is hardened and obstinate. But I will make you as unyielding and as hardened as they are. I will make your forehead like the hardest stone, harder than flint. Do not be afraid of them or terrified of them or by them, though they are a rebellious house. And he said to me, Son of man, listen carefully and take to heart all the words I speak to you. Go now to your countrymen in exile and speak to them. Say to them, this is what the sovereign Lord says, whether they listen or fail to listen. Then the Spirit lifted me up, and I heard behind me a loud rumbling sound. May the glory of the Lord be praised in his dwelling place. The sound of the wings of the living creatures brushing against each other, and the sound of the wheels beside them, a loud rumbling sound. The Spirit then lifted me up and took me away, and I went in bitterness and in the anger of my spirit. With the strong hand of the Lord upon me, I came to the exiles who lived in Tel Aviv near the Kabar River, and there where they were living, I sat among them for 7 days, overwhelmed. At the end of the 7 days, the word of the Lord came to me, Son of man, I have made you a watchman for the house of Israel. So hear the word I speak and give them warning from me. When I say to a wicked man, you will surely die, and you do not warn him or speak out to dissuade him from his evil ways in order to save his life, that wicked man will die for his sin, and I will hold you accountable for his blood. But if you do not warn the wicked man, and he does not turn from his wickedness or from his evil ways, he will die for his sins, but you will have saved yourself. Again, when a righteous man turns from his righteousness and does evil, and I put a stumbling block before him, he will die. Since you did not warn him, he will die for his sin. The righteous things he did will not be remembered, and I will hold you accountable for his blood. But if you do warn the righteous man not to sin, and he does not sin, he will surely live because he took warning, and you will have saved yourself. The hand of the Lord was upon me there, and he said to me, get up and go out to the plain, and there I will speak to you. So I got up and went out to the plain, and the Lord of and the glory of the Lord was standing there, like the glory I had seen by the Kabar River, and I fell face down. Then the Spirit came into me and raised me to my feet. He spoke to me and said, go shut yourself inside your house, and you, son of man, they will tie with ropes. You will be bound so that you cannot go out among the people. I will make your tongue stick to the roof of your mouth so that you will be silent and unable to rebuke them, though they are a rebellious house. But when I speak to you, I will open your mouth, and you shall say to them, this is what the sovereign Lord says. Whoever will listen, let him listen. And whoever will refuse to let him refuse, for they are a rebellious house.
Thank you, Kim.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Can we see Acts? We've studied the Old Testament for quite a long time, various books, and there seems to be a common theme amongst these books, and that is that the children of Israel continue to be rebellious over the centuries. God has not given up on them. Here he is referring, he sent somebody else now, book of Ezekiel. He sent Ezekiel there, and he's trying to preach to them. God is so frustrated and angry with these people, and yet he's not given up on them. It's absolutely amazing to me that he has put up with these people for so long. There must have been a number of righteous people amongst these that were rebellious that found favor in God's sight. But there had to be, as a whole, just a bunch of evil, rebellious people, hard-hearted, stubborn. Any thoughts on God's patience with these people? I'd like to hear what some of you have to say about God's patience, even though he's saying to Ezekiel, hey, I want you to go talk to these people. And he lays responsibility at Ezekiel's feet. He tells Ezekiel, if you don't take care of this, if you don't tell these people, then it's going to cost you. So don't hesitate. Now, God also had him tied up in his own house, couldn't speak for a week. But he lays it on him. We'll see that later on in the next chapter or so, after he gets over his dumbness. We're going to find that he really lays it on him hard and heavy. Anybody have any comments?
Ron.
Sir.
Peter tells us that God is not wishing for any to perish, but for all to come to repentance. So that was as true back in Ezekiel's and Daniel's and Jeremiah's day as it is in our day. He was not looking to destroy them. He could have done that with a breath, but he didn't do that. He wanted them to repent, but he didn't ever make robots out of anybody. He left us with the free will to choose to do his will or choose not to do his will.
I also, you know, I find it seems kind of harsh as I was reading that. Seems kind of harsh that God is going to hold Ezekiel accountable for the results. However, he doesn't do that without properly equipping Ezekiel. So in verses 8 and 9, He says, I'm going to make you as unyielding as they are. I'm going to harden you. I'm going to make your forehead like the hardest stone, harder than flint. And so don't be afraid of them or terrified. And so he equipped them. And I think that if we liken that to us, God has equipped us. He doesn't send us out into the fray without preparing us. And he doesn't hold us accountable for our service to him without preparing us. And like Ralph said, God is long suffering. And I find a lot of comfort in that. You know, how many times have I hardened my heart, and God is patient and long suffering. You know, I heard somebody say one time, God's just crazy about us. He loves us. We're his creation. He wants to give us every opportunity to have this relationship with him. And we see that over and over and over again. But at the same time, he's going to hold us accountable for our part in this relationship.
We have a responsibility to learn as much as we can about God and equip ourselves as much as we can, so that if someone asks us about the hope they see in us, then we have an answer for them. We're never to give up on somebody because of their hard heart. You never know when the right seed is going to be planted for someone. It could be just a simple act or a word or study. Who knows? But sometimes I have done that a couple of times and have been shocked. Somebody saying, well, Ron, I never would have started coming to services if you hadn't said something. And it was actually a shock to me. That something so simple could have such lasting effect. And I think God expects us to be prepared so that if we have an opportunity, we should never give up on anybody. And I think this, you know, I know that they must have been extremely rebellious and hard-hearted for Ezekiel to have fear about that. And then the Lord told him that I'll make you just as hard as they are. So don't worry about it. You go after them and don't worry about the consequences. Don't be afraid of these people. All of this time, these people are in captivity. They have seen what has happened. They're not going to have another king. Never going to happen. Their country is going to just be under somebody else's control from then on. Of course, they can't see that. But how they, you know, over the centuries, not been able to see the blessings that God has given them, and yet here they are in a situation that they're not going to get out of. God is going to send some of them back eventually to rebuild the temple. The country is, as an independent nation, is just not going to happen again. Anybody else have any comments? And thank you, Kim, for that. That was very good.
Ron?
Yeah.
In verse 10, I think it's interesting that he said to me, son of man, take unto your heart all my words, which I shall speak to you, and listen closely. And then verse 11, then go to the Gentiles, to the sons of your people, and speak to them and tell them whether they listen or not. That's what we have done many times, I'm sure. That we tell people whether they listen or not. They have the option of paying attention and listening to God's word as we portray it to them or not.
And that's a freedom that God has given people all along. You know, you can listen or not listen, but if you don't listen, you're going to pay the consequences. So, but we know that God has made us a free will spirit so that we have our own destiny in our own hands. And it's always been that way. God spoke through various means. This particular case, he's speaking through Ezekiel.
Ron, we have that choice.
Yeah. Ron, before you get away from this, understanding God's patience is as difficult to understand the greatness and the power and the all-knowing. God is so much higher than us in patience and forgiving and loving and everything at creation that it boggles our mind, I think, sometimes to think that somebody could be that gracious and that forgiving, and it just doesn't even compute really truly in our brain.
And of course, this is for our benefit. You know, we're studying Old Testament scripture, Jeremiah, Ezekiel. We're seeing what happened to these people. But this is for our benefit as well, isn't it? When Ezekiel was deposited and set 7 days in the city, people walking by him and all that stuff, it really upset them. They were really uptight. He never said a word, I don't think. And then he started out. It's kind of like Job, and he sat and never said a word for 7 days. His friend sat with him, and he just sat there in silence for 7 days. And here we find that that Ezekiel is doing the same thing. So it's kind of interesting. We'll start getting into some of the warnings, prophecies against the country of Judah and Jerusalem. Start getting into that. I want you guys to read chapters 4, 5, and 6 for next week. And about the middle of the week, I will put out a questionnaire and comment section. So we're like that during the middle of the week.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Can I interject something?
Absolutely.
When I study scriptures, I try to look at the primary audience, and I understand that we're the secondary audience. You know, we're looking at this much later and reading this. And I try to put myself in the place of these people. So sometimes I'll try to slip into the role of Ezekiel as I'm thinking, wow, what, you know, here God's talking to him. And I wonder what he's thinking. Oh man, you're going to use me for this. And this is kind of a scary position to be in. And God's saying, don't be scared. I got your back. But then I put myself in Israel's place and in these people's place. And I think, you know, they're in exile. They saw the destruction of Jerusalem, and they must have really felt in despair. And that tends to make one quite rebellious. We think, well, where's God when I need him? And so I think of me as a secondary audience. Do I do that in my heart sometimes when the going gets tough and it's hard to see God? Do I get a little bit defensive and a bit rebellious? I'm not saying these people were a little bit. I'm thinking for God to take these strong measures. It was pretty ingrained in them. But I try to put myself in their position, not that I'm excusing their actions, but I try to understand their actions. I try to understand why they were rebellious. Things weren't going their way. They weren't seeing God in the picture. And Ezekiel needed to be sent to them so that they could see God again. And I think he has the effect of turning some hearts toward God, back toward God. And obviously some people are going to be so in despair, so deep in that despair and rebelliousness that they're not going to turn back to God. But the prophets were sent so that people would turn their hearts around. But anyway, I just wanted to, I don't know if I'm articulating that very well, but I try to put myself in the position of these people and try to get my head around why were they so rebellious? And I think that there's kind of good reason, not that I'm excusing it, but I think there was a lot going on that it was very difficult for them to see God.
Well, up until this time, and I think we learned in chapter one about these people were able, finding out that they were able to worship God other than at the temple in Jerusalem. But we found in Josiah, Kings, in Jeremiah, we found that Josiah, somebody discovered the scrolls. Josiah started a reformation, and there must have been some consternation about that. They were setting up idols in the temple. They had shut it down. They were setting up idols in the temple, so forth like this. Of course, this made God angry to the point where and their rebellion that they were experiencing during that time. That's why they ended up in Babylon. So I kind of lost my train of thought there. Well, sorry about that. Old age just kept catching up with me, I think. So anyway, so they're in a state of they're despondent, that's for certain. But I don't think they recognized what they have done. I don't think that they understood, and that's why Ezekiel was there, trying to tell them what they've done and what's going to happen to them if they don't change the way. And then we're going to, of course, find out what happens a little bit later on. Ron? That's about all I had to
Ron? Talk.
Yes.
I had another thought. You know, as we've been talking about Ezekiel, we've talked about the rebellious people, and Ezekiel is warning them, don't be rebellious, get your life turned around. But you have to remember, God also said, if you go talk to the righteous and the righteous reject you and they start to sin, then I'm going to hold them accountable. But of course, you've saved yourself because you've warned them. So, you know, our place is not fixed. We could be rebellious and turn it around, or we could be righteous and let go of that just as easily. So I think we have to remember that, you know, they're the two poles. They seem almost diametrically opposed, but either one of those poles can become involved in sin or stay involved in sin. And in either case, God will hold us accountable.
Yes.
I had another thought. People don't like to have rules, especially when they're in a country where everybody else is doing that and they were looked down upon, so they're going to join them because they don't see God, but they can see that wooden statue up there and they think that he can speak. And of course they were called dumb and mute, but anyway, you go with the flow, so to speak, and then you forget what you really should be doing, and you leave God out of your life, and you just get worse and worse and worse. And sometimes you might listen, but probably not, because you're already set in the way of the world and that's what you want to do. So the people are stubborn, of course. They want their own way. They don't want rules. They want to do what they want to do.
Yeah, you know, God mentioned how ridiculous hiring somebody to form a, you know, go out and find a piece of wood and have somebody carve it up for you and, you know, stick it in a niche in the wall and bow down to it and worship it. And it was ridiculous. You see that going on right now. I have one in my family who's a Buddhist. She sits down and burns incense and candles and all that stuff. And I don't know. You know, I don't know how people can do that and really think anything is capable of coming from that. And that's, you know, God fought that all along.
You know. But I think, and I think Jimmy and Ron, I think you speak to sort of that downward spiral. These people were despondent. They were in despair. They were in exile. And then they became rebellious. And then they get to the point of being ridiculous. You know, it gets to the point where that rebellion just kind of carries you away, kind of like our Sunday morning lessons on temptation. You know, you kind of get gripped and kind of carried away, and you need someone to help bring you back. And that was Ezekiel's job, is to try to interfere with that downward spiral. I think this is fascinating.
Anybody else have any comments?
Ron, I kind of liken the situation that Ezekiel finds himself in to cancel culture that we see around us every day. It's hard to stand up and be counted for God when the whole culture that you're a part of seems to be standing against you. And I've kind of been following the case of a PE teacher who was dismissed by a school district because he refused to bow down to the notion that girls become boys and boys become girls. And they fired him. The court has said that the school district was wrong, that he has that freedom of speech. And it's just fascinating. And I see that being played out in our culture. And there, I hesitate to admit that there are times when I don't say something because I find myself surrounded by people that are not likely to listen. And sometimes I fear for my own safety if I speak up.
Sharon and I went out to a restaurant this afternoon and had lunch. And I think we were probably the only church-going people in there. Everybody else was had holy jeans and dirty shirts and hadn't shaved for 2 or 3 days, this type of thing. And they kept staring at us because we were dressed up. And I'm sure that some of them had a, you know, kind of a frown on their face, like, you know, who are you trying to kid, or what are you all dressed up for, or whatever like that. I never had anybody ask me about the hope that was in me, but they sure gave me some evil looks. And it just seems to be the direction that people are going these days. I don't know. And I think you're probably very astute as far as fearing for your safety. In some situations, that's certainly true. Anybody else have any comments before we close out today? Don't forget next time, chapters 4, 5, and 6.